What's up?
Homie.
Hometown.
Yeah. I'm Bill Carnes. This is my co-host Dave Champion. Together we are
totally unprepared.
I believe this is episode 42. Might be episode 43. Anyhow.
Have you lost count?
Yeah, you know, it's just I've been so busy recently. I posted two of them in the last week. And
oh, by the way, you told me you're going to get away for that little decompression vacation. Is that going to affect Wednesdays?
No. I leave tomorrow. I'll
be back. Okay.
I'm just going to be gone through the week. My brother and I are going to go hiking and camping and just screwing off in Utah and Eastern.
Emphasis on the screwing off part.
Just going to chill out and have a good time.
You deserve it. You've been working your butt off.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Before you get going, you may remember my friend Renee from the gym, who's 87 years old. No, go ahead and throw that picture up there. That's she and I at the gym just hanging out. Thank you, Noah. And I just wanted to do a shout-out to Renee. She was on a ladder. Okay, this tells you the kind of gal she is. At 87, she was up on a ladder doing something, and unfortunately she fell, and I understand that she has shattered a number of the bones in her face. So, Renee, I hope you get well. I hope you're not in too much pain. We're thinking about you.
Yes.
All right. She's cool. She's very cool.
We have a few different things we could talk about today, Dave. The FBI director spouted off about something today, or the other day.
Yes.
Something about transatlantic cables that are obsolete. Of course, the cop in North Carolina.
Let's start with the transatlantic cable, because I think that's the silliest of the bunch.
Yeah.
You're probably all aware that Vladimir Putin took the Russian Air Force into Syria, and he accomplished in about 12 days what, if you believe the U.S. government narrative, he accomplished in 12 days what the United States government had not been able to accomplish in 12 months.
Oh, what we've been talking about for 12 months and doing nothing about.
Right. Well, no, but last September, September 2014, Congress approved Obama to bomb ISIS in Syria.
Yeah, they didn't do squat.
Well, no, they've been bombing like crazy, but they're telling the American people they're bombing ISIS, and they're not.
They're
bombing targets to undermine Assad and his ability to govern while claiming they're attacking ISIS. Well, Putin went in 12 days, he shut ISIS down, right? Which pretty much exposes the whole CIA, U.S. government lie about bombing ISIS.
Right.
And if he can do it in 12 days, we sure as hell weren't doing it.
Right.
And so now, there hasn't been a lot of friction between the U.S. and Russia, you know, since they closed the Cold War, a little here. But now that Putin has made an ass out of the United States government and pretty much ripped the covers off of the lie about bombing ISIS, right? Suddenly, what's the government claiming now?
They're claiming that Russian submarines are patrolling and working closely in areas of this transatlantic fiber optic cable that's supposed to have all these various communications. Of course, we know that there are many lines of this transatlantic cable, which are essentially obsolete with satellite technology. Back in the 60s, the U.S. was able to tap into the Russians' version of that to get some various communications. But they're saying that there's no indication that they are, but they possibly might actually be considering severing that cable as if there's only one.
Right.
At a very horrible spot where we couldn't really get in there and do any repairs. First of all, there's dozens of these. And secondly, they're obsolete. So I think look at this hand while this one does the magic trick sort of thing.
We're mad at the Soviets, I'm dating myself. We're mad at the Russians, so we've got to find, the U.S. government has to find some way to say to the American people, bad Russians, and the American people aren't buying it in Syria. The American people are pretty well seeing what the truth is now. I think this whole thing with Putin has opened their eyes.
Could you imagine back in the 70s and 80s that in 30 or 40 years, we'd be agreeing more with the president of Russia than we do with our own on foreign affairs?
And you know what? I think of the vast majority of people, and I think this cuts both ways, people on the left and people on the right, the vast majority of Americans now find Vladimir Putin, when he speaks, to be more credible than the president of the United States. And I'm not attacking Obama. I think if it was Bush or anybody else, it's the fact that the United States government, as I've said for years on my show, lies all the time, and lies even when the truth would serve it well. But I think people, especially in reference to Syria, the blinders have been torn off a little bit. So now when Vladimir Putin speaks, people go, okay, odds are, let's see, Obama, Putin's telling the truth, which is an indictment, I think.
Yeah, I agree. So the director of the FBI, coming out saying that people filming police, recording police and such as that, he believes is hobbling them in doing their duties where they actually are afraid to do their job for fear that people might be recording them. Which my response is, do your friggin' job properly and there's nothing to worry about. It's just if you're going to do something wrong or break the law or abuse people, that's when you should be worried. Which, if that's the case, you're the wrong person for the job. If you have to worry about people filming you to do your job, just resign now. Yeah. Just quit because you're the wrong person for the job.
I got to tell you, a lot of people are going to take umbrage with this remark. But you and I both know a disproportionate number of law enforcement officers because of our past background and so forth. And my personal experience with them is the ones for whom I have respect, okay, that I say, I would want him next to me in the car because we share a common ethos on how the job should be done, are few and far between.
Oh, yeah.
Now, those officers or deputies concerning whom I can say that, every single one of them to a man has told me, film me because I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm doing the job as it's meant to be done. Film me. The ones that I hear say, well, you know, there are circumstances when I don't think it's necessarily appropriate. And, you know, requiring officers to wear body cams is excessive. Yeah. Guess who those are?
And they should be out the door.
Right, right. Which, unfortunately, we've let the problem. I look at the problem with the deterioration of quality police work. I look at that like somebody getting in debt. Okay, let's say a guy's making $30,000 a year, and he's got $50,000. Okay, if he's making $30,000 a year and he's got $1,500 in debt, manageable.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. What if he's making $30,000 a year and he's got $50,000 in debt? It's now almost an unmanageable problem, and that's how I. And of course, he didn't get $50,000 in debt overnight, right? That's a gradual process, just like the deterioration of proper police work is a problem that has come on gradually over a number of decades.
It became systemic years ago.
Yes, and we're now, society is bearing the poison fruits of that now.
Yeah.
So, and which we just saw on video from South Carolina.
We did. As a matter of fact, it was just earlier today I finally watched that video. I just finally watched, it was, you know, what, 13 seconds worth of, or less, yep, maybe 8 seconds of this cop deciding that this girl needed to leave the classroom. And I think it was because she pulled her phone out of her bag,
yes,
did something with it or glanced at it and put it right back.
Correct.
The teacher.
But we should say the policy of the school is you can have your phone in your personal possession throughout the school day. In class, you may never touch it.
Right.
That's the policy.
So she touched it, did something, put it right back. And the teacher decided that was a disruption. One thing led to another, and the school police resource officer came in there. Yeah. She refused to go to detention room, go see the administration, whatever it was. So he decided, since she wouldn't get up, mm-hmm, to basically roll her backwards in her desk, you know, desk chair combination.
Roll is a very nice word.
Yeah, roll. Tossed her over.
Yeah.
And then when she fell out, grabbed her, rolled her, and then dragged her to the front of the room.
Yeah.
And what's the cop's nickname?
The students have nicknamed him, long before this incident, Officer Slam. So I just did one of my angry truck rants on this. If you want to look at it, it's on the Public Figure Dave Champion page on Facebook. Thousands of views in the 30 minutes. First 30 minutes it was up. But clearly, if his nickname with the students is Officer Slam, this is not the first time he's been violent with students. It's just the time there was a video running, and he got caught.
And thank God that there was a video running. And you and I have both saw this. The position that he was in, the way he was able to manipulate his arms, this guy's been trained to fight.
Yeah, and he claims that he, on his Facebook page, that he can bench press 600 pounds. Now, I'm sure that's a lie, but even if it's halfway true, okay, what he's telegraphing, what he's doing, and it's amazing to me that nobody in his agency has decided to pursue this, what he's doing by making that claim on Facebook is saying, hey, police chief or sheriff, I am a chronic steroid user, because there's the all-time record for natural bench press, and this guy was a freak of nature. In the last 33 years, one guy, freak of nature, 510 pounds natural. 99% of people who are weightlifters, who go to the gym day in and day out, who do not do steroids, 99% of them never see a 400-pound bench. If you're benching 600,
you're on roids. Yeah,
if you're benching 500, you're on roids, okay? Which makes it very difficult to control one's temperature. And the more you take, the more difficult it becomes. So if it were true that he's benching 600 pounds, the amount of chemicals he would have in his body would make it virtually impossible for him to control his temper, which we just saw in the video.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, my thing too is, remember, it went down like this. Stand up. No, I didn't do anything wrong. Stand up. No. Okay? Now, I've had people try and post South Carolina law that, you know, disturbing a school in operation and you know.
There's a misdemeanor involved.
Right. It's like, no, sitting in your seat peacefully saying no is not a criminal offense, okay? So for these douchebags who are saying this, that's total bullshit. And his response to that, I mean, when you look at the video, it's appalling. I mean, he slams her back and then slams her forward and drags her up to the front of the room for saying no. You and I talked about this a little bit at lunch. How many ways were there to handle this? And before we get into the specific ways, I just want to make this statement. Any officer who works at a school, and this is verified by the National Organization of Resource Officers, should be the most friendly, outgoing, reasonable, intelligent, creative type guy. Okay?
You have to be able to relate to the kids in the school.
Right. Teenagers are hard anyway. You've raised teenagers. I've raised teenagers. We know. Teenagers are tough. And what should have happened was he should have started from day one. He's been in that school 7 years, Officer Slam. He should have started by creating rapport and friendship with these kids. So when he walked in, and instead of demanding, he said, you know what? I get it. Let's just you and I take a walk. No stress, just you and I take a walk. She would have gone, all right. If he'd spent his time creating rapport rather than being a thug, that's how that would have gone down.
Instead of doing the old officer presence thing. The first time I watched it, I was thinking, why didn't you just ask her, how can we arrange for you to get, what do you need in order to just get up so we can go out and talk about this?
Right.
I just want to go outside. What can I do to get you to do that?
Yeah, and as you pointed out, oftentimes, if you ask a simple question like that, and somehow people don't want to ask a question. It's like, I'm demanding.
Yeah.
She's a teenager. Ask a question.
It happened because they butted heads and he had to win.
Yeah.
That was the problem.
And he's a thug.
Yeah. We'll be back in the next segment right after this.
You know what goes on during the breaks in this show. And now it's time for... What is up with the apparent need of law enforcement to ostensibly solve, that's definitely in quotes, every problem right now? This is precipitated by the incident that Bill and I talked about in the first segment, the South Carolina deputy who was a school resource officer down in South Carolina. However, it's a phenomenon that I have been noticing for I can't tell you how long. I'm going to probably guess I've been noticing this penchant on the part of law enforcement these days for at least 4 or 5 years now. And it is the single greatest reason that I see for needless or illegal police violence is that police somehow have come to believe that if they say X and you say, well, hang on a second, officer. Let me explain myself. Boom! You get body slammed because you were not immediately compliant with their instructions. Case in point, the South Carolina, the deputy Ben Fields, who, by the way, NBC News reports that the chief says he's going to fire him. Let's hope that's an accurate report. He asked the girl to stand up. No. I want you to stand up. No. Next thing she knows, she's getting slammed on a concrete floor. Millions of different ways to handle that, other than the way that nonviolent ways to handle it and the way that that deputy handled it. But I see this time and time again. Another very poignant example. This goes back probably 6 or 7 months ago. There was a young man, I think he was 12 or 13, in a park someplace back east. I think it was Detroit, maybe Philadelphia. And he had a BB pistol. And somebody called and said, there's a young guy out here with a pistol. I'm pretty sure it's a BB pistol, but I'm also pretty sure that some people could get scared, so you might want to come out and talk to him. This is obviously not a high-intensity call. obviously the police officers who are responding have to consider that the firearm might be real and deal with it on that basis. But a guy who says, I'm pretty sure it's a BB gun, but somebody could get scared. That's not like he's shooting people dead in the street right now. It's a different level of call. What was the response of the police? Well, there was a trainee in the passenger seat and a field training officer in the driver's seat. The field training officer was so hyped up, so adrenalized, he's gonna be a soldier for good, that he ran the police car right up next to the young man so that the rookie officer, when stepping out of the vehicle, was 6 feet from the door. And they're screaming instructions at this kid, who's like, what? It's just a BB. And they shot him. The rookie shot him. And it's not the rookie's fault. The rookie had no choice. The field training officer put him in a spot where it was act now or potentially die. This is, had they followed what they are taught in the academy, they would have stopped 60, 70 feet back. They would have opened the doors, taken a barricade position, issued verbal instructions. If he couldn't hear them, get the mic out, issue verbal instructions, and de-escalate the situation and find out what's going on. But they didn't do that. Virtually every case of needless or illegal police violence I see, there was another one. A man who was not quite right mentally. He came, the two officers responded to a home. This was down in Arizona. And the woman comes out, and it's white officers and black suspects. I bring this up because I think these are relevant. For instance, South Carolina case. If that had been a black cop doing that to a white girl, I think a lot of people who are supporting that cop today would not be supporting him if the dynamics were different. I'd like to think that racism is dead in America, but sadly, evidence tells me it's not. So these two officers are near the front door, and out comes the lady, and she's, oh, hi, officer, sorry. Very calmly, no problem. This is not a crisis situation. You've got to read people's vibes when you're a cop. Sometimes somebody will speak to you, and what they're saying says it's okay, but their body energy says this is not okay, and you need to be alert. Her body energy and her words were very relaxed. She passes through the door out onto the driveway. The son comes to the door. Who is not mentally right? He's got a screwdriver, and he's twiddling the screwdriver in his fingers, right? This, now, not to claim that this is a no-threat situation, but this is certainly not an immediate threat to your life situation. The officers at that time could have immediately backed away. As a matter of fact, there were, right behind the officers, there was a big car. They could have gone around the car and then began a dialogue with this gentleman. Instead, they stood right there, toe-to-toe with him, 3.5 feet from him, and they're... He's not mentally right, and they start telling him, drop the knife, drop the knife. He doesn't have a knife. He's got a screwdriver. And he's like, what? He turns around like this, and they shoot him because they didn't back off, move behind that car, creating a physical barrier, giving them what's called in law enforcement a greater reaction gap, and then deal with the situation time and time again. Another case up in Billings, Montana. A police officer pulls over a car with four young men in it. He knows them. He knows them on a first-name basis because he speaks to them by first name. He gets out of his unit, goes around to the passenger side, although he, which local law enforcement doesn't go to the passenger side for traffic tickets. That's what state troopers do because of highway traffic. He goes around to the passenger side, and he opens the passenger door and begins a dialogue by referring to one of the guys by his first name. He says to one of them, let me see your hands. 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 I'm going to shoot. All of this standing right in one spot. Never moves. Ends up after 7 or 8 admonitions, show me your hands, unloading into this kid who had no weapon. I looked at that and I was aghast. That young man, who was also a father, is now dead. And the police officer was saying that he had to shoot him to save his own life. No. All he had to do was move. He's directly in the opening of the passenger door. All he had to do was move to the rear of the vehicle, back to his car, take a barricade position, and call for backup. Everybody would still be alive. But you know what? It's got to be solved right now. I don't get it. I am completely at a loss to understand where law enforcement in 2015 has the perspective that every confrontation has to be resolved. Let me rephrase that. In every confrontation, the other person must submit even if they're just having dialogue. The other person must submit to the officer's demands now, or violence is going to occur. This does not seem like the America that I want to be a part of. Bill, what do you think?
I think that when police decide that it's time to issue a command, that command needs to be issued in an appropriate situation, because most of the time it can be issued as a request.
Absolutely.
Like, will you please show me your hands?
Mm-hmm.
Like that kid in the car. Hey, show me your hands. It was, maybe the kid's name was Ted. Hey, Teddy, do me a favor. Just put your hands where I can see them.
Right. And normally, and that's also another, what he did was another fallacy, another training fallacy. If you're the officer and I've got my hand concealed under my shirt, you don't want to tell me, show me your hand, especially when you don't have your gun out.
Right.
Because by the time my hand comes out...
Action versus reaction.
Action versus reaction. If you really believe the person has a weapon and their hands are concealed, you want to come out and say, do not move.
Right.
Take a position of advantage. Now say, when you're, say, behind them, at a position of advantage, hopefully behind cover or concealment, then say... Let me see your hands, right?
Let me tell you a story that it happened to me 20 years ago or more, 25 years ago perhaps.
I'm it all hyped up from the story. I got to lower my voice.
It had to be about 25 years ago. I got pulled over in Las Vegas by a traffic cop, Las Vegas Metro traffic cop, a senior officer, I should say. You know, he'd obviously been on for a while on a motorcycle. And he pulled me over. I was going too fast. So he says, he asked me for license, registration, proof, insurance. I said, okay, my paperwork, my registration and insurance are in the console next to me, which I'm happy to get, but my handgun's in there too. He says, okay, just leave the gun in there and don't pull it out, because if you pull it out and you go to try and shoot me, then I'll return fire and I'll try and shoot you.
This whole thing's going to get ugly.
Yeah, and he says, the whole thing's just kind of going to get out of whack. Both of us are going to be on TV, and there's going to be a bunch of paperwork involved. So just grab the license and
now,
registration.
Now, is that not the way to handle it?
Yeah, I mean, yes. Talk about de-escalation.
Right.
When other times...
But you know physically, despite what he was saying to put you at ease, to make light of it, so it doesn't become a very heavy, jittery situation, you know that physically he was still ready for whatever came.
Because also, as he was saying that, he was walking right behind the B pillar.
Right.
Behind the B pillar, and so he was ready to go. Now, a complete opposite of that, I was in California. I fought in a martial arts tournament, and I was coming back to Nevada. It was literally like 2 miles before the state line, maybe even a mile before the state line. And CHP pulls me over. Now, back at the time, the law was your gun either needs to be locked up or in plain view.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I had a gun back, and I'm totally unaware of all this, but I had a gun in a case behind me. I had the holster in the back seat on the floor. So CHP stops me, and he's looking around, and he says, is that a holster? Then he pulls his gun out, and he points it at me through the passenger window and starts shouting commands. Where's the gun? Where's the gun? Where's the gun? I said, it's locked up in a case behind me, like the law says.
Yeah, and like my hands can't reach.
Yeah. So, you know, so he totally flipped out. But again, oftentimes we refer to highway patrol as misdemeanor cops in a felony world.
Yeah.
Because all they're really doing is writing tickets and handling accidents. It's tickets and accidents. It's really the life of a highway patrolman, where police work is usually done in the city, calls for service sort of thing. So two completely different reactions mm-hmm. to a similar situation. You know, I've had cops before. You know, I got a gun in here, and they'll ask, why do you have a gun? Hey, I can't rely on you guys to be around whenever, you know, the feces strikes the air conditioner.
Because you're too heavy to carry around on my back all day, yeah.
You know, I'd be happy if you followed me around all the time to help provide me a little bit of safety and security, but when you're not there, I've got a gun just in case of emergency.
I think questions like, why do you have a gun, they should actually... Unless you're pursuing a criminal investigation, I think they should be punishable, those questions, by the agency.
But
they're so inappropriate in a land of liberty with the right to keep and bear arms.
I agree. Yeah. But I usually de-escalate it with something like that by complimenting them. Look, I would love to have you or one of your partners helping me out and providing security all the time. But when I can't, if something goes down, I got a gun and I'm trained to use it. And I give a little bit of background on the training, blot it off.
What do you think it is that causes the modern police officer to feel that if you even... We know a friend who was shot and almost died because he started to, because he wished to have a dialogue with an officer rather than complying immediately with turn around and put your hands behind your back over, what was it, a U-turn ticket or?
No, he failed to turn right in a right turn only lane.
Right.
And had a warrant because he failed to show up in court for having driven in the carpool lane by himself.
Right. So anyway, traffic.
I believe it's offenses. A training problem. Yeah. I believe it's absolutely a training problem. We need people to submit. There's too much. You know, got to worry about officer safety, and people need to submit. You cease being a human being, and you start forcing people into something, and there's problems.
And perhaps militarization of police.
We'll be right back. Get out your driver's handbooks and stay tuned. You know what really grinds my gears? People who suck at driving. I mean, people who really suck at driving. You ever come to a stop sign and somebody stops? You're approaching from a half a block away, and they stay there until you come to a stop? Then when you stop, now you've got to wait for them to go through the intersection before you can go, causing everybody a bunch of wasted time. It says stop, not set up camp. It doesn't say put it in park and hang out for a while. It doesn't say that. You know, I was having a shipping container move from point A to point B recently. And it's on the back of this great big truck. And the guy's driving, the guy that's driving the big truck, he's got his blinkers on. We're approaching an intersection where there is no stop. It's a T intersection, okay? We're going straight through the T intersection. They have to stop. This guy cut off this truck carrying this huge shipping container on the back. Like I have not seen anybody get cut off before. He had to jam on the brakes. All of my crap in this shipping container goes flying forward, pushes the truck a little bit, and just barely misses slamming this guy in the driver's door. What would possess him to do that? I don't know. My response is almost to the point of the driver driving the big truck, instead of hitting the brakes, should have hit the gas, tagged the back end of this truck and sent it spinning and careening off into the desert, and then kept going because the guy's such an idiot. Another thing, folks, that mutual left turn lane in the middle of a roadway, be it a four-lane road with that fifth lane in the center or a two-lane road with that third lane in the center, that is not a merge to the right lane. Matter of fact, that's illegal and unsafe. How often do I see, or do you folks out there actually turn into that mutual left turn lane? You take a left turn, turn into it, drive down that thing for a few hundred feet, and then merge off into the right. It's not a merge to the right lane. If you notice, every single arrow painted in it points to the left. It points to the left. That's what it's designed for, is turning left. You know what I love? Somebody pulls into that thing, they want to turn to the right, and they just drive straight in the thing for a while. Just drive straight for 200, 300, 400, 500 feet in the left turn lane to merge to the right. If I can get in front of them and turn on my left turn signal because I'm in the left turn lane and disrupt their illegal and unsafe travel, I'm happy to do that to you. That's me. If that happens to you, I might not even need to turn left. I'm just going to disrupt your stupidity for doing it. How about this? In a parking lot, and you're just cruising straight across all the parking lanes, not in the direction of travel, but against all the parking spaces. When other people are going, say, north-south, you're going to travel east-west with your foot on the gas. You don't care who's in the way. You know what is really famous to have happen in parking lots? People are walking. Because they park, get out of the car, and they walk into the store, business, or wherever they're going. And if you're driving like an a-hole across all of those, foot on the gas, forget where the crosswalks and the pedestrians are, you should ought to have your head bashed in. That is just stupid and unsafe. And if you do it around my family, man, it's going to get ugly. Another thing, don't approach people in parking lots if you don't know them. I have my woman sitting in the car, two daughters in the car. Another one of my daughters is returning a cart, and some guy comes up to the window where my girlfriend is and starts asking her for some sort of a handout. And my youngest daughter is on the far side of the car, not far from him returning a shopping cart. man, Dave, the red lights went off. This can be a problem because of the way the guy was walking and what he looked like. And I told him, I said, get away from the car and move in that direction. Then he looked at me and started asking me for money, whatever he wanted. Get away from my car and walk in the other direction. Still didn't happen. Until I literally started to move over the hood of the car towards him and I yelled at him, get away from the car and move in that direction. While this hand went back. Pardon me, now I'm getting excited. At which time there had been enough time for my youngest daughter to come back around to my side. I opened the door for her to get in. He finally keyed in. You know what? This guy's really not happy about me being here, and I believe he's ready to defend his family of nothing but women in the car. And then he left.
Right.
That's the sort of thing we need to key into. Stop being stupid in and around traffic and cars and other people. Dave?
Oh, I'm with you. I have no problem. A lot of people are bothered by panhandlers. I'm really not, but I agree with you wholeheartedly. Panhandlers need to have a little bit more on the ball about the circumstances in which they approach somebody. The only time in the last several years that I had to put my hand on my gun was when a panhandler that I saw him. He didn't know that I saw him because I was using my peripheral vision. I saw him. He was probably 60, 70 feet away. In the area of the parking lot that was lit, when I arrived at this place, it was still daylight. When I came out, it was night. It turned out I was parked in an area with no lights in the parking lot, right? So as I'm heading for my vehicle, I see him get up from the lit area and start heading over towards my car, right? I go around the passenger side to put something in the passenger door, and he starts coming around the side of my vehicle in the pitch black, right? So I don't know who this guy is. All I know is he's sitting around waiting and watching, right? So my hand goes to my gun. And as soon as he started to come around the back part of my vehicle, step away, gave him a loud verbal command. And he was like, "Ooh!" Right. And he did move away, to his credit. But the last thing I'm going to do is want to find out in pitch darkness what he's there for. And then as he's moving away, as he's walking away, I just want to know what time it was. Yeah, you couldn't have just asked me that when I was out in the lit part of the park.
Yeah. You always hear that. That's a real con.
It is.
I have never actually had a vagrant come up to me, a panhandler, if you will, come up to me and say, hey, can you tell me what time it is? It's never, ever happened. I've had people ask me the time, but it wasn't somebody who was a vagrant or a panhandler.
Funny story, I was sitting stakeout one time back in the law enforcement days, and I'm in a parking lot. I'm probably 200 feet from my target. I've got binoculars in the vehicle, and here comes these guys that they wear like the $5 shirt and the $3 tie, and they got a box of stuff, and they go around the parking lot and they're trying to get you to buy their stuff. And I'm focused on this, right? But I see out of the corner of my eye this guy start to approach, and I really didn't want to be distracted from what I was there to observe, so I didn't want to get into a thing with him, right? So I turned around. I'm going to do it to the camera for the sake of the audience, but I turned around and I gave him one of these. And he was like, whoop. He was one who was a bit more astute. The double lane thing in the center you mentioned, dude. Now, in certain parts of California, in certain ways when the traffic is set up, you cannot do that. It's against the law to go into the double yellows. Okay?
Right.
In Nevada, it's the way of it. It is what you're supposed to do under the law.
No. To merge into the right, you're talking.
Correct. I'm going to make a left turn.
Uh-huh.
I turn into the double yellows and merge into the right. Merge into traffic.
That's against the law.
In Nevada?
It is.
I've had completely inaccurate information from the day I moved out here.
It is against the law and it is unsafe. It is a left turn lane, mutual left turn. If you turn into it and then merge to the right, you're breaking the law.
See, when I first came out here, I was told that the law was different in Nevada and that that's expressly and specifically the purpose of those lanes.
Absolutely not. Because if you look at every single arrow in there, if it's for you, the direction you're going,
I'm not talking about arrows. Middle of the block, driveway, coming out.
I get that. But in that lane, there are arrows painted in it in various spots. They all point to the left, to the merging to the right. Some people might see that as being safe until someone else wants to get into the left lane and they hit them. That is illegal and unsafe.
It's funny because a lot of people don't like being wrong.
Mm-hmm.
you know, to me, every time I get a piece of information I didn't have before, I feel better about things. So number one, I'm glad because I'm not doing anything illegal now. I won't do that anymore. But more importantly, I don't have to be irritated because I would sit behind somebody who traffic would be flying by in one direction. And I'm like, there's all that space in the double yellows. Just pull out, get in there and merge in. You don't need to wait until all, you know, until 5 minutes of traffic goes by in order to make your left turn.
You know, I wouldn't be too upset if somebody pulled into that left lane and stopped and then moved in when it was clear. But I see people driving for hundreds of feet in these
now,
things
see, that's,
and then merging.
That's what I was told when I came to Nevada. I was told they are for turning out of and turning into, but that if you do something like more travel more than 100 feet or something like that, then that's against the law. That's what I was told when I first got to Nevada.
It all depends. Yeah, it's 100 feet in the city, 200 feet in the rural county area, but that's only in the left turn lane. If you're actually merging, you're not supposed to be merging right out of it at all.
Oh, well, good.
That's actually against the law.
This is actually good because now I won't have to sit in my vehicle and go, you idiot! I'll realize I'm the idiot.
Exactly. And again, you know, people that come to a stop sign and they park, I've experienced this all the time. You're coming up to a stop sign and somebody's going perpendicular across your way and they stop and you're coming up. They wait for you to stop before they go. Why?
Yeah.
Well, you see the front of my vehicle like dip down, which means I'm on the brakes. I'm slowing. Just
right.
go.
Right.
You think I'm going to wait for you to hit the gas and then I'm going to dive mine. And, you know, it's bumper cars. It's not a figure eight circle track here.
And, you know, one of the things that I was told back, I think in my driver's ed days when I would have been 15, was if there's a confrontation, you don't want to force the right of way.
Yeah.
But if you have the right of way, go.
Yes.
Right? That actually having the right of way and not going creates other problems.
Yeah, and I get that virtually on a daily basis in this town. You'll be parked, you come up, somebody has a right of way, and they start waving you on. And when there's more than just you, there might be three or four people at this intersection. The person that should have the right of way waves them on. And then the other asinine a-holes that don't know how to operate at a four-way stop, the person in front of them, they go up, they move up. There's a person in front of them. As soon as they go, the person behind them that doesn't know how to work a four-way stop just gets right on their bumper and goes through like it's a tandem car.
I think they know.
They just go on. Oh, my God, I'm so scared. I got to go, too.
Either that or I'm in such a hurry. By the way, I've got to tell you the thing about crossing the parking lot at... But...
You're the guy I'm ranting about.
No, you're not, because I do it in like super large parking lots, like a Sam's Club, where half the parking lot is empty.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's where I do it.
We all do that, Dave. That's fine. But I'm talking about people, it's like, there's a lane over here where you can go across, but over here, halfway up, there's cars parked around and you're just scooting on through because you didn't want to move 50 feet down that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And quit being a knucklehead.
You know, when you talked about pedestrians, and, you know, that's the thing that gets me. I mean, somebody, you're driving a 3,000-pound car, 6,000-pound car, and I don't care what the law is. Like in New York, the vehicles have the right of way. New York City, the vehicles have the right of way, not the pedestrian. You know, my thing is morality tells me when I've got a 6,000-pound piece of steel, I need to be cautious of the pedestrian, if for no other reason than they might not be too slick.
The number one city for auto pedestrian accidents and deaths, Las Vegas.
Oh.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to our fourth and final segment. This is where we talk about viewer emails, and you can always send us those emails right here at daveandbillshow@gmail.com. And, of course, you can get all of the videos that we've done, all of the shows. You can get the audio versions all at totallyunprepared.info. And one of the requests we had, Dave, was you're always moving your hands around, and people are trying to see what your hand tattoos actually say.
Yes, yes. So I thought I would address that quickly. Most of my tattoos have meaning, and as you know, Bill, a lot of them are liberty-based.
You just don't go in drunk and say, just hate me up however you want.
That thing on the wall, and put it on there, yeah. All right, so my right hand and left hand are two parts of one quote by a gentleman named William Hazlitt, who was born about the time of the American Revolution and was a famous literary critic, and he's got some fabulous quotes, and this was one that really resonated with me. And the right and left hand have completely different themes. On my right hand, it says, the love of liberty is the love of others. And then that brings life. And, of course, you can see the heart symbolizing life. That's the first half of that one quote by Hazlitt. The second part of Hazlitt's quote is on my left hand, and it says, the love of power is the love of ourselves. And you can see this hand is green, and the flower has color symbolizing life. And this is a dying plant, and it says ruin because the love of power brings ruin. And, of course, there's a little skull face down there. So they have themes, and they are both liberty-related.
See, I just have a butterfly on one butt cheek with the quadratic equation on the... No, I don't have any tats.
I thought you had a tramp stamp.
Oh, I don't have any tats. Yeah, hey, you know, I actually saw a guy in Las Vegas this last summer on a bicycle wearing shorts and no shirt, and the dude had a tramp stamp.
Uh-huh. All right. You know, I get the whole...
I didn't even want him to... I was a little disturbed.
I get a full back piece. The tramp stamp, not so much.
I just don't get it. So, we wanted to talk a little bit about...
Romney.
Yeah, Mitt Romney and his comment about, basically, we're not sheep. And that causes people... That causes Washington to be dysfunctional.
Yes, I thought it... You know, people have theories. You and I... see them all the time. They're out there. People and notable people on television and radio have theories. People on social media have theories. And the vast majority of them are nonsense. And this one certainly fits in that category. Mitt Romney asserted that because we no longer have, because the media is less, the mainstream media is less dominant in that back in the old days when you and I were young, if you wanted to get what passes for news, okay, what they want you to hear, you listen to NBC, ABC, CBS. That was it. Maybe some local.
Yeah, 5:30 in the afternoon, watch the national news.
Right,
good to go.
And of course, then there was the first wave of expansion, which was things like CNN and cable channels, right? But today, right, with the internet, there's a million different choices that you can avail yourself of to get information. And so Mitt Romney's point was, with this cornucopia of sources from which to look at and pull information and gather what perhaps used to pass as news, that people have a more independent viewpoint. We don't all track on what ABC said last night, and that's making things more contentious, and thus Washington, D.C. is having trouble getting things done.
Okay, so what was the excuse back in the 50s and 60s and 70s then for Washington not getting anything done? What was the excuse then? That's just asinine. Because we don't all go through the same news source,
right,
that Washington is dysfunctional. That makes no relevance in my... I don't see the connection at all.
Yeah.
Even close.
And because we're not getting force-fed through a hose by the dominant media, that's bad. It makes things bad.
And what about this idea with Paul Ryan being lined up to be the next speaker and how people are liking him?
Oh, yes, I loved that one. I'm going to paraphrase. I don't have the article in front of me for the quote, but it was a close ally of Ryan's, and he said the contributors, which means the big money people.
Yeah, the people that pay him off.
Right, right. That they really like him because he's... very articulate. He's very thoughtful. And here's the part that just was like, woo! They said that, like, wow, you just said a mouthful. And rather than just being focused on the process, he can talk about policy and at the like administrative part of how the government operates and so forth. Okay. Other than just being focused on the process, he can talk about government policies and what government does. Well, what is the process?
The process is what we call payoffs.
The process is, what can I do for you?
Yeah, lobbying. What can I do to get the money from you,
yes,
in order to pass legislation that's friendly to you?
What can I have my party do so that you will fill our reelection coffers with money? You know...
I have a solution to this.
Please, share.
The only way to get Washington working properly is to end the money train in Washington. Just absolutely end it. And I believe that there should be some sort of a formula. The formula should be based on a criteria of your geographic district that you represent, mm-hmm. either your in the House of Representatives, the Congressman, or in the U.S. Senate, multiplied by some formula based on square miles as well, if you need to travel. There'd be, you know, the initial formula might be good for, you know, 1,000 square miles, and then it's got to go bigger than that, whatever it might be. And based on the average household income within that area that you represent, and let's say that that average household income is $39,000, then you have an absolute limit of raising, let's say, 10 times that. That's the absolute limit in being able to spend on any sort of an election or re-election. That's for you and any challengers as well. And all of the money that you get needs to come from within that district. And if you get any sort of industry-related money, you must have that industry within your district. Like if your district that you represent in Manhattan has no oil companies in it, they don't drill for oil there, you can't accept any oil money. It needs to be from that area. That's my thought on it.
I had very similar lines. Mine was more towards the preventing lobbyists. Okay. In other words, there would be no lobbyists. I cannot, if I'm a CEO of a company, I cannot hire you to represent me. That's a felony. Okay. Now, I, as the CEO, if it's important enough, I can make my time available to get my butt in my private jet and to fly to the Capitol and to meet with you. However, I can only meet with you if you are my elected representative. If my company is based in Oregon State, but my official residence is in New Mexico, there's the senators from New Mexico and the congressman from my district are the only three individuals I can talk with because they're my representatives. I can represent the corporation because I am the CEO, but no lobbyists. It has to be my time, and I can only talk to my representatives, period. End of story. Anybody else who tries to influence peddle, it's a felony with a 20-year mandatory sentence.
I'm not too disturbed about the idea of lobbyists as long as there can't be any money coming out of them. All of the money needs to come from the district with what you're in. And now that I think about it a little bit more, I guess I do kind of like that. But if every dime that goes into your coffers has to come from your district, limits.
I should say I agreed with that. Mine was in addition to yours.
So what if we can do that? Then and get the money out of Washington, D.C. politics, mm-hmm. then that's the only thing that has any hope in saving us. Because money itself is not evil, but it truly is the root of all evil, especially political evil.
Yes. It's funny because I had somebody talking about a political thread about what Americans worship, and they were talking about, like, religion. I'm like, people don't worship religion in this country. People worship money. All right. Fret on everything.
I think I told you a quote that a friend of mine told me that he had learned from someone else that about Christianity. Christianity started off in the first century as a relationship with Jesus Christ. From there, it went to Greece where it became a philosophy. From there, it went to Rome where it became an institution. From there, it came to the Americas where it became a business, and that is when it came to me.
Yeah. With a request for a check.
Yeah.
Fret on everything. Fred, what's his name? Reed, I think is his last mm-hmm. name. Trippy old dude. He used to be a crime reporter in Chicago back in the dirty days.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. That's where he cut his teeth as a crime reporter. He would call himself a journalist, and he's now retired down in Mexico. He took a much younger gal as his wife in Mexico. He's living a life of Riley. And he comments on the state of America. He's glad to be gone from America. He thinks we're going in the wrong direction. And he writes commentary from Mexico. And the latest one was, how would you characterize it, Bill?
Basically the demasculinity and cisification of America.
Yeah, he cites some examples. One of them, for instance, and I see these things all the time, and I agree with him wholeheartedly on this. They put a school into lockdown because a student said gum.
Yeah.
Gum.
Yeah, chewing gum, bubble gum.
Not gun. They put an entire school into lockdown because a student said gum.
You never know. This school, if it was an older high school or junior high,
yeah.
likely it actually has a gun range in mothballs in the basement of
right,
it. Because
right.
kids used to bring their .22 rifles to school, and they would shoot in the basement in the rifle class, the rifle club after school.
Yeah. Another one was they called like a tactical team to the school because a student had shown up in a Halloween costume. Just the things that cause is you probably remember this back after like the 70s and the 80s when there was some of the what was arguably real terrorism back then, not government motivated terror or government funded terrorism. And remember the old deal? There's a briefcase. Somebody forgot their briefcase like next to a table. The whole building had to be evacuated. Oh, yeah. You know, it's like,
God forbid somebody leaves their luggage next to the luggage area at the airport when they're leaving, because they're going to clear out the entire airport and they're going to have a bomb dog and robot and everything else.
And the terrorists don't need to blow up anything. All they need to do is make packages and go leave them like on the same day in every Walmart and every shopping mall. And all of America, all of America's commerce will be shut down because there's an unattended package.
Unreal. And, you know, we don't fix things ourselves. We don't handle things ourselves. We're always calling somebody else, calling an expert, getting everybody's opinion. And then we're sharing everything we're doing on social media.
Yeah. Not handling our own problems, expecting someone else to do it. Yeah. Anti-gunners.
Yeah. No independence left. It's all community garbage. Anyhow. Good show. We'll be back next week.
See you then.